This oral history interview is being conducted by the Area 53 Archives Committee to pass on the history of our fellowship through the shared experience of one of our members. No duplication or reuse of this interview beyond sharing on platforms of the Area 53 Archives Committee is authorized without the express written consent of the member being interviewed and the Area 53 Archives Committee. Today, we are interviewing Norma S. from Columbus, Ohio. We'll have her in her introduction share her sobriety date in her home group. So, Norma, if you would start out with that and then tell me a little bit about your life before AA. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? That type of thing.
Okay, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Norma Spradlin. My sobriety date is December the 12th, 1977. And my home group is the Lodestar group on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. And I'll tell you in a real general way, I was born June the 30th, 1938 in Tuscarawas County. I had a good childhood, and that's where I grew up, out in the country and close to New Philadelphia in Tuscarawas County. And I had a good childhood growing up until I was about 12, 13 years old, and my dad's drinking got worse and stuff. And my dad was a coal miner at one time, and then he became a machinist. And then mom was a stay-at-home mom. It was just all growing up, you know. And it's, when did I start drinking? I started drinking when I was about 16. And I had my first taste of beer that I couldn't stand. And but my first drunk was when I was about 16, and I was drinking homemade grape wine by a bootlegger in Tuscarawas County, and he made good money at that. And I got married the first time 6 days after I turned 18, and I had three children by that marriage, and two of them died since I've gotten sober, and the one I live close to here in Columbus, Ohio. When did I know my drinking was out of control? I don't know. You know, I didn't think it was out of control until some guy accused me of being an alcoholic sitting on a bar stool one morning in the bar. I did not do any treatments. I just did AA, and I'll tell you why I did AA. I found out about, this is going into the recovery part of how I found out about AA. My dad, like I said, got to be worse than his drinking. And on December the 15th, and I can remember this very clearly, 1964, my mother called me and told me, and I was married and had my three children by that time. Mother called and told me that my dad was never going to drink again. He was in St. Thomas Treatment Center. And I said, yeah, right, that'll be the day. And anyhow, I started hearing about AA through my dad back in 64. And I went to my very first AA meeting in September of 1965 to hear my dad lead. And it just, what I felt at that meeting was a lot of love and a lot of peace of mind. And there was only about 12 of us. And at the time I came in and where I came in, most of the people, members of AA were men. There was very few women. My area in Tuscarawas County, women stayed home so much and raised kids and took care of all this stuff that they needed to take care of at the house. And didn't think that a woman could be an alcoholic. So it was really hard for us women when we started doing AA. But I'm real grateful that I got to go to my first meeting and had a real good impression of it. And over the years, until my dad died in February of 1981, I went to different meetings with him and my mother. And it was for the, I got a lot of pats on the back for supporting my dad. And I needed all that since I've found out I needed all that attention because I felt like I didn't get enough attention, especially from my first husband. Anyhow, I started drinking more and more. I divorced my first ex in 19, 74, and boy, my drinking took off from there, and I did a lot of crazy things, and I was all over the United States with people I shouldn't have been with, and thought I was doing okay, and that I was right. How I got started with going with AA was going to the meetings with my dad and my mother and aunt. And so the morning that the guy accused me sitting at the bar on December the 12th, I was sitting there having my second drink of whiskey and 7-Up when he came in, and he was missing work because he was drinking again. And he said to me, "You can't drink, you're an alcoholic." And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm in Al-Anon and I can drink." And I had started going to Al-Anon in May of 1976 because I had a counselor tell me I was crazy and I needed to do something about a 12-step program. And of course, I wouldn't talk to her about my drinking. What I learned over the years of working the steps, that because I got 7 uncles dead from this disease, and all I ever seen them do was drink. So I started going to Al-Anon, and then I changed jobs in 1975, and I went into a factory that I was the first woman that they hired, and I did a lot of flirting, I did a lot of manipulating, I did a lot of BSing, and I kept my job. It isn't because I could work. And then I started understanding, and when I changed jobs, I promised myself, I didn't promise God, I don't think, that I would not mess around again with a married man. Well, that lasted a whole month, and I said I wouldn't get drunk either. And that lasted a whole month until I started again. When I finally decided that I needed to do something different was that morning on the bar stool. And I already was going to an AA meeting on a Friday night in Dover, Ohio. And that's where my original home group was Dover, Ohio on Monday night. We had AA and Al-Anon, so combined at that time, which only lasted about 6 months. And anyhow, as always, they would ask you, "How are you?" And as always, I would say, "I'm okay." Anyhow, my first impressions of AA was very good as far as the men goes and what it was doing for them. But I didn't get any good impression about the women because we weren't supposed to be alcoholics. So I went to the meeting, and of course I wouldn't talk about anything that was bothering me. And then I heard a guy in May of 1976 talk about the monkey on his back. And the biggest enemy I have is me. And I didn't understand that for a long time. I see a question here. It says, "Where did you go to your first AA meeting?" My first, very, very first AA meeting was in a old folks home in Scioto County back when I went to hear my dad. This guy talked about the monkey on his back, and a gentleman that I had seen 3 or 4 times at meetings, he always came drinking, and he said to me, "Norma, I don't want to tell this whole room full that I'm an alcoholic." And I said to him, "Charlie, you do not have to tell them. I've been here for 2 years and I'm not telling anybody." So I went out after the meeting with the speaker and his wife, which was from Cambridge, Ohio. And I said to him, I said, "I got to go back in and tell that man I just told him a lie." And the speaker says to me, "What did you tell him?" And I told him what I said to him, and he started laughing. He said, he used some real fine words, and he said, "You are coming to Cambridge next Thursday night and leading. We're tired of waiting on you." And I'm like, "Now, wait a minute. I just told you what I said, and I felt like it was a lie. I don't have a sponsor, haven't worked the steps." And I said, "I can't do that." And he said, "Yes, you can, and you better, or I'm coming up and picking you up." So on Saturday night, I went to Yorksville, Ohio, and I got my first sponsor. His name was Sarge, and he had 26 years and was 72 years old. And what Sarge taught me was to keep going to meetings, read the big book, pray, and keep doing the next right thing. Sarge went with me to met me at Cambridge, and I did my first lead, which was full of crap. And my dad was already into tapes and stuff. In fact, my dad gave me tapes over the years. And he said that he taped me, and Calvin, my last husband, had converted the tape into a CD. And he said, "You're right, your lead is full of crap, you know, and stuff." And it was the shortest lead I probably ever gave. My ego was so bad when I come in, and I thought I knew so much, and I thought I was doing so much right. And what I've learned over the years, there was hardly anything that I did right except to live and work. And I've had all kinds of jobs since I was 14. I started cleaning houses. I've worked different factories. Then I started cleaning houses again when I was laid off. It's just been a real interesting life. Back in the fall of 1977, I decided I need to go to more AA meetings and not so many Al-Anon meetings, because I've seen a lot of men there, you know, and you got to watch what you pray for, because I messed around and I got a second ex-husband by doing that. And we was only married 2.5 years and did a lot of fighting, and I left him 6 times, and I tried killing myself twice during the time I was with him. And what I realized after I did the steps and stuff was the fact that I wasn't trying to kill myself so much as I was just wanting to get his attention and control him. I have a lot of control issues. I still got too many to this day. We broke up, and I met my third ex after my dad had died in February 1981. I moved back home with my mother. And by May of 81, I was ready to divorce my mother. And I could see why my dad had so much trouble with her. But they didn't believe in divorces, you know? And I was the black sheep of the family of getting so many divorces. Well, I lived with my mother and grandmother, and my mother would say to me just about daily, "Please don't get mixed up with a man today." And I'd say, "No, not today." Well, I started dating my third ex in September of 81. And by January 5th of 82, I moved to Columbus with him. And I was not divorced from my third one yet. And to this day, I still won't mess trying to sponsor somebody that is doing what I did, because I'm afraid it would affect my patience and tolerance and my thinking too much. So I don't sponsor people that is married or messing around with married people. In early sobriety, in my area where I got sober, they did not push at doing the steps or anything else. I don't know when I heard about the traditions. But I did get a woman sponsor 10 months after I got dry. A woman moved into town that had 3 years, and it was her second time around. My male sponsor decided I needed a woman sponsor, and I went to Dee, and Dee, God love her, started the Wednesday morning women's AA meeting in Dover, Ohio. And it was a big book study. And whenever we said the Serenity Prayer, you did not talk about anything except recovery and the big book. And Dee was on a cane. She had about lost a leg due to her drinking. And if we brought up anything else, she'd take that cane and slam it down on the table and said, "You gals asked to come along with me. So you're going to do it my way or hit the highway." And she would point to the door. Well, after doing that twice, we all knowed what she meant, and we did not bring up anything between the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer except the big book. I did not get real honest with Dee, even though she tried her best, God love her. But she was a home drunk and I was a bar drunk. And so I didn't want her to know what kind of a crazy drunk I was. So I did not tell her everything that I should have told her. I was still, at the time I got her, I was still married to the second ex, and he had got into the program through a judge, and we went to a lot of meetings and stuff. And most of the meetings back home was speaker meetings. I don't remember ever being in a discussion meeting back home. And I may have been, but I just don't remember. Anyhow, after Dad died in February of 81, and my grandmother died in July of 81. And then I came to Columbus in 82, and things just kept changing. And when I came to Columbus, I sure as heck didn't like your meetings. You weren't doing it the way I was used to having it done in Canton and Akron and Maslin and all those places that I went to meetings all the time. And there was a gal, you know, God is so good. There was a gal not too far from where me and my third ex was living that was working at a speedway there on 161. And she was originally from Canton, Ohio, and I had met her in meetings. And of course, she wasn't going again. She came to Columbus, one of those geographical cares. And I would go in there after work, and because I got a job at the Marriott Hotel. And I would go in there after work, and I would just gripe to her about the meetings. So one night when I went in there, she came out with cups, coffee, and a small coffee pot and said, "I don't want to hear you no more. I want you to start a meeting that satisfies you." And so that's what me and my third ex did. And we started the Rebos One meeting that meets on Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. And the meeting is still going, and they're doing Zoom. And what was funny at the time, there wasn't any, very many morning meetings in Franklin County. And I had gone to one downtown at central office at 1706 East Broad and really liked it. But I still wasn't in it. That was a discussion meeting, come to think of it. But I didn't want a discussion meeting. So we started with the lead meeting at Rebos 2. It's a discussion. Rebos 1, it's a discussion meeting now. And things picked up. And right at the same time, the R&R Fellowship, which is still going, Tony, that was very instrumental in getting that started. He worked all afternoons and late into the night, and he needed early morning meetings. So him and his father owned a nice restaurant down on, he owned a nice restaurant here in Columbus, and told Tony he could use the basement, and Tony had meetings in the basement three times a week. And what is so funny, I've never met Tony until we started these meetings, and he did them on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and we did ours on Tuesday. So there was four morning meetings, and boy, did we ever get the crowds. We did not know that so many people was working afternoons and couldn't get to meetings because they was all night meetings. So it was a blessing that God directed us into doing those meetings. Learning the AA, working the 12 steps, I worked them haphazardly in the beginning. And I did not talk to anybody about doing the fourth step, and I didn't do it for 2 years. And then when I did the fourth step, I did it with a gal that I shouldn't have done it with. She did nothing but criticize. But I'll tell you, one of the things that happened with having that male sponsor and my first woman sponsor was they always told me, you don't drink no matter what. You don't pick up no matter what of anything. And I'll tell you, it was a good thing because I came back home and I didn't tell my woman sponsor, but I told my male sponsor, my first one, about what happened. And he said, "Oh, I wish you had said something. I could have told you that was the wrong person to go to do your fifth step." So, you know, it's really weird because that is one thing that I've learned over the years, that we need to talk to somebody that we can trust, that we know will be, in my opinion, compassionate to help us with the fifth step. I am so grateful that I have learned that over the years, because I have done many and many a fourth and fifth steps on different subjects that I just needed to. When I moved to Columbus with my third ex, he had 5 years of being sober and I had 4 years of being sober. He had been a manager of a halfway house in Steubenville, Ohio, for alcoholics. And so I had it in my cute little head that I didn't need a sponsor. So I had the biggest idiot for a sponsor I ever had in all my years of being sober, and that was me. And depending on him, and he never did get a sponsor while we lived in Columbus. I was about a year dry from here in Columbus whenever I got asked to go to Newark, Ohio, to lead a meeting over there. And Mary, God love her, and there's several in this program that knowed Mary, had found out that I had been asked, and she asked me if she could go along with me. And I said, oh, yeah, why not? I went and picked up Mary, and we went to Newark, Ohio for me to lead. And on the way back home, Mary says to me, I would love to sponsor a gal like you. And I said, you're it, you know. And that was in early 1983. And I started spending time with Mary, going to meetings with Mary. And sometime in the spring of 1983, I also started doing service work for COGF. What I did was I started answering phones, and I still like talking to a drunk on a phone. And I'm still listed with COGF for them, the answering service, to call me. My learning the AA way of life in my early sobriety, for me, it was making sure I got to enough meetings, try to practice the program, especially with AA people, because I didn't do it very well with regular people for a long time. Anyhow, I started doing that as much as I could. But I loved being in meetings and just being there. I always found a lot of understanding and people's love in meetings. There was, at the time I was in Dover, when I first sobered up, Dover was the only meeting up in that area. And then the next one was 20 miles away. And we had to do a lot of traveling. And I still miss that, getting in a car with a bunch of people and travel from meeting to meeting. Because going to the meeting, we would talk about ourselves. Coming back from the meeting, we would talk about the lead and take their inventory. My attendance at meetings up until 10 years ago, I was usually doing anywhere from 4 to 6 meetings a week. And that's been my thing all my experience until 10 years ago. I've only had one home group back home, and that was Dover on Monday night. Come to Columbus and help start my first home group. Went to a lot of different meetings here in Columbus. Would get upset, like one night they asked me at a meeting if I would chair that meeting, and I said, I'm not a home group member. And they said, you don't have to be. And I said, yes, you do. You know, that's the way I was brought up in AA. You couldn't chair a meeting unless you was a home group member. And because what the old timers in that time period thought, that if they couldn't get a home group member to chair the meeting, there was something wrong with the meeting. Well, I learned that was a thought that they had at that time and stuff, but it was not really true. So I talked to Lowell, which is past, also an old timer, and he said, Norma, we've got so many meetings in Columbus, and we do not have enough home group members to do what you're saying. He says, I understand what you're saying. So he said, go ahead and chair it. So I chaired my first meeting on Saturday night, and the group still, it doesn't exist anymore. It's on Butler Avenue. And all of a sudden, I can't remember the name of the group, but it was real active and big at one time. it was just a shame. For me, it was just a shame that people didn't care more about the meetings, and that I still feel that way today. So that part in me has not changed. There's a lot of people that does believe in the meetings and wants to help with them. But for as many people as we have in meetings, I think we ought to have more commitment. And that's my opinion. The other groups that was important in my sobriety was Sunday morning at Sunbury, Ohio. They had a good meeting going, and it's still going through Zoom right now. And I've been a part of that meeting as a visitor or not a home group member in all the different places that they have been. And I am so grateful for the people that is in that meeting that they've stayed there. There was a Saturday night meeting, the one I told you on Butler Avenue that I can't remember the name of. I'll remember it after we get off of here. And I would go to it, plus my home group in the R&R, went to them quite often. But my importance for me that got me started into really looking at alcoholics and that is when I started working at central office on the phones, and I did not miss that. And whatever job I had, I always made sure I had time to be able to go to central office and answer the phones. My home groups over the years has been Rebos 1, Rebos 2, which meets on Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock, On the Way home group, which is right now not meeting, but we're thinking about getting started back up again in April. There was a meeting downtown called Trudging Through the Big Book that lasted for 7 years, and we really trudged through the big book. And I feel like I'm leaving a meeting out because I have this brainy idea, a coffee pot and a place to meet is good for my resentment I may have going at the time. Two meetings that I've helped start did not go that way.
Norma was out of towners, one of your home groups?
No.
I know you were frequently there.
Yeah, but it wasn't one of my home groups. And
I can kind of start asking the questions so you don't have to necessarily go from the questionnaire as much.
Okay.
If that would be helpful. What about conferences and other events that were
important? Oh my goodness gracious. My very first conference was in Jackson Mills, West Virginia, 1978. And it was a mixed conference of men and women in Al-Anon. And it was a lot of speaker meetings and that. And I went down there twice a year for about 5 years. And then they started the winter meeting that I got to go to in January. And I went to it for 3 years before I got away from going down there so much. I went to my first Founders Day was June of 1977. And I was in Al-Anon, and I went to Founders Day and found it really peaceful and nice. And a lot of people from all over in Chicago used to bring two big buses in from Chicago every year to be at Founders Day. The other thing that it always got me is, because I went to a lot of Amish meetings also, is that Amish drank. Because when I didn't know that they drank, and I used to go to their anniversary until they quit having it every year since 1966. You know, I would go with my dad and that. And those anniversaries at the Amish, people came in out of Canada and boy, just all over. And they finally quit having it in January and had it in April so that more people could come. And it's always usually 800 people there. And it was a sit-down dinner. The food got delivered to the table and that. And it was done up by the band committee of that school that we met in. I did Founders Day. I did Jackson Mills. I did started doing a meeting on the river. I can't remember what year. And I hope to God that one gets back up again here soon, maybe in another year. I have done conferences up in Cuyahoga Valley that we studied the big book, and it was called The Spirit of the Valley. I've been in conferences out in Las Vegas. I've been out there twice to a conference out there. It's called State Line. There is another. Oh, I went to a conference down in Florida about 15 years ago. Me and my Al-Anon sponsor went down to that one, and it was a very good conference. Did a lot of anniversaries, a lot of anniversaries, you know, and it's just, well, my last husband, Calvin, and I was tapers. Calvin Spradlin and me were tapers, and we taped a lot of anniversaries. We taped some conferences. We've been in Indiana in conferences, in Michigan in conferences. And what I found in every conference I ever went to, that there was a lot of love and a lot of help. And that in Area 53, when it was going, we did a lot of that taping of that and stuff. And Calvin and I bought the business off of the man that had it before us. And Calvin retired and I retired, and I found places to go. So we would just keep on traveling. I've been into Canada in conferences and didn't tape up there, just went. I have met so many wonderful AAs. Right off the top of my head, I cannot remember any jerk I met in AA, you know? I really can't. Even the newer ones that's coming in, and the drunk ones that I've seen it come into meetings and stuff, they weren't even that bad, you know? And I'm real grateful for that. But being on the phones, you never know what kind of drunk you're going to get. And I had one morning at 2:00 in the morning, decided that I had to come and take care of her right now because she wanted to get well right now. Well, too bad, lady. You know, you call back after 8:00 and we'll see what we can do for you. And of course, she didn't call back.
Can you share about, Nora, can you share for a little while about some of the people that, you know, they say we stand on the shoulders of giants. Who are some of your giants?
Oh, my goodness gracious. There was guys out of Massillon, Ohio, and here, and I got to keep this to Area 53. In Coshocton, there was a guy named John, and John used to, when he got sober, he would drive from Coshocton, Ohio, every Wednesday night to Akron, Ohio, to be in the meeting that Bill and Bob was in. And they told him that he needed to start a meeting down there, that there was probably more than just him being a drunk down there. So John, because he loved his group in Akron, started the meeting in Coshocton on Thursday night. And a good friend of mine from over in that area is still helping take care of that meeting. Lauren, that I gave you the phone number of, Chris, helps take care of that meeting. They're just not Zooming. So John started the meeting, and they used to have big anniversaries. And when I talk about big anniversaries, I'm talking about guys in suits and ties and women in long dresses and jewelry. And I mean, you thought we was going out to some big fancy ball someplace the way a lot of us dressed in that. That was just something else. Newcomerstown, Ohio used to have a meeting, and it was the last thing on the block for Area 53, and then going towards the river, Cambridge and Steubenville and all them was in Area 53, and they still are, but they're not as active as they was years ago. And I've been to a lot of meetings in there, and there used to be one out on the island close to Willing, although Willing wasn't a part of Area 53. They had a meeting out there on Sunday morning that was attended by so many people from Area 53. They had a lot of anniversaries over around Steubenville and that I've been to. They've had some day-long workshops that I've been to. When it came to AA, I put AA before anything else, okay? And then everything else fell into place. I've always had a job. I've always seen my children, not as often as they like for me to. Now they're wishing they didn't see me that often. And since I've retired, and it was just great to be able to travel. I haven't driven since 2013. I really miss it because I was a driver and I would take off and go any place to a meeting. I've been to meetings down in Georgia, all down through the South. I've been to a lot of meetings. So, you know, if you get a chance, and I've, like I said, I've never met a jerk. You know, it's just always been nice people. And especially if you was from out of town, they really enjoyed having you around.
Norma, could we talk a little bit about your experience working with newcomers? How are newcomers contacted? You know, what kinds of 12-step work were going on? You know, and obviously your sobriety spans a number of years. So,
My first newcomer was given to me by the Problem Drinking Clinic back in Dover, Ohio. And I had met the gal that ran that program through Al-Anon, and she knew I'd went into AA, and she gave me this gal that was bisexual. And I'll tell you, if that wasn't something else, trying to work steps with her, and she was on welfare and just a mess. But she taught me an awful lot of really getting into looking at the book and the steps and stuff. When I came to, I sponsored two other ones up in Dover. But when I came to Columbus, because I was a new one in Columbus and had some years compared to some of the women down here, I got three pretty doggone quick after we started the Rebus One meeting. One was real willing, another one, and I've passed my numbers out, my phone number out over the years to so many people, and I'm grateful they all don't call me because I'd never have time to go to the bathroom if I answered the phone calls all the time and that. But the newcomers, for me to work with them, has always been a challenge. And I want to just take them and shake them. And then I have to learn patience and tolerance, you know, practice that again. And remember what I was like, because I wouldn't listen to anybody in the beginning either, you know. My first sponsor, the biggest thing he did for me was get me to understand I need to shut my mouth, quit my cussing, pray, do the big book, and go to as many meetings as possible. That's it. That's the best thing I ever learned.
Any 12-step stories or anecdotes, any stories that stick out to you and working with others that are particularly funny or instructive?
Yeah, the second gal I sponsored here in Columbus, she came to me at a meeting. She was about 6 months dry, and she said, "Guess what? I can't get my driver's license." And I said, "What do you mean you can't get your driver's license?" She says, "Well, you know, they have that question, are you an alcoholic?" And they did at that time back in the 80s. And she said, "I told them yes, so they wouldn't give me my license." I said, "There is a time," and I still believe that, "there is a time that we need to lie. And that is one of them." I said, "I wish to heck you had told me that ahead of time." And it was so funny. And then I was leading a meeting one night, and a gal come up to me, and I was talking about how AA was so different for me in Columbus, Ohio, than what it had been back home. And this poor gal, she says, "Can I have your phone number?" And she said, "I got to talk to you." She said, "I moved here 6 months ago," and she told me where she came from. And she says, "And I wished I'd heard you 2 days ago. I just started drinking again." You know, and I felt so sorry for her. But the thing that I've had with the gals that I've sponsored over the years, I may have them in my house detoxing them because I've done that. I may be at their house talking with them because I've done that. You know, and I am just real grateful. Every time I've went and talked with a newcomer, I've always learned why I don't want to drink again. Because I'll tell you, the misery I see them in, and I am so grateful to have had so many newcomers in my life. And they all haven't been women. There's been some men in my life And that, in fact, because of losing my sons, I have quite a few AA guys that I call sons. And one of them right now, I haven't heard from for about a week and a half. And he just got sober again and stuff. And I just want to shake out of him. But you know, it's his journey. He's got a God like I do. And he got to keep on doing it. The groups that was important to me for my sobriety was Columbus Sunday Breakfast at one time when it was out on Agler Road was very important to me. And that there was a lot of older long-timers in the program that went to that meeting. And Pete was one of them. And Pete was just such a quiet guy, would never chair, would never lead. But man, he could talk your leg off you. And he knew the AA program. We also started a woman-to-women's luncheon here in Columbus, Ohio. It's about 33 years old now, maybe 35. I can't remember which without looking it up. Anyhow, we would have people come in from different places to lead that women-to-women's luncheon. And in 1988, we put on a woman-to-woman seminar here in Columbus, Ohio. And then they had it here again a few years ago. It was just so great. And there was people from all over the Northeastern United States coming to it. And they was wanting to take it to their place. And we told them to start their own, and they did. And so whenever the first woman-to-woman seminar was up in the Massachusetts, there was six of us from here in Columbus, Ohio, that went up there to be at the seminar. You know, if I had the money and the strength and that, I probably would be at some conference at least once a week, because I've always met so many different people there.
Norma, I appreciate it. There's a perspective that you have in your sobriety that it's just a lot of years and a lot of experience. I want to move to a little different topic within your personal recovery, and that is those tough times, those times when, you know, not picking up a drink wasn't easy to do. When the idea of a drink looked like a good idea, when times were tough, and how you got through those. So
the first tough time was the night that my dad died, and I had only been sober about 3 years and was getting to know a dad that I had always wanted and didn't know that, you know. And my dad, 10 minutes before he died, said to me, "Norma, I'm sorry about Sherwood and Tim. That's my two sons that's died." And I said, "Well, Dad, they're out in the waiting room. You'll see them." And he just shook his head. My dad had a way of shaking his head when he wanted you to know something, but he didn't know how to explain it. Well, my first son, Sherwood, which was my youngest son, got killed on his job on May the 30th of 1986. And I knew that night that I was going to lose my other son. And I am real grateful that I was married to my third ex at the time, and he was in AA and believed in it because he was a real support to me. And we went back home, and I had to go through that. But the people that came that knew that was my son that came and supported me was so many AA people, just so many. And of course, I knew without a doubt I was going to lose that other son before I ever died. And I tried everything under the sun without locking him up in a psych ward someplace, which he didn't need, to get him to change some ways. But what I did the most was just kept loving him and knew without a doubt that I was going to lose him. And 5 years later, in August of 1991, I did lose him. And the same thing happened between back home, all the AA people and Al-Anon people, and all the AA people and Al-Anon here in Columbus. Because at that time, I was still doing Al-Anon quite a bit. And the support that I had to go through that. In 1991, when my second son died, I got my third divorce, got fired from my job, got a new job that I retired from 11 years later, and my second son died. And if it hadn't have been for going to so many meetings and believing and staying sober, no matter what, I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have done it. I never thought about drinking. Now I thought about killing people and killing myself. But of course I didn't do that either, because I'm not in Marysville and I'm still here. But I'll tell you, it's just crazy. And I give God and AA credit for everything that I've been able to go through. I had a tendency with jobs to keep changing them, because after 3 years, I thought they didn't know what they was doing. And Norma, God love her, I met her the first day I was in Columbus, made me do an inventory on it. And what I learned is that I thought I was smart, and I wasn't that smart. These people was running big corporations and making millions of dollars. And here's this little peon that finished high school and didn't go on to any kind of schooling other than that, thinking that she knew what she was doing. Now, over the years, thinking I know what I was doing has been the hardest thing to accept, that I don't know what I'm doing. Like this guy out of Westerville says, used to be 40% I didn't know what I was doing. And then a couple of years later, he's up to 50%. Last time I heard him lead, he was up to 90%, that he was doing okay, you know, and stuff. But it's just really hard. But I really believe that no matter what, you don't drink and you don't drug. Because I've done some drugs in my time, but not street drugs. That's why it kept me from accepting that I have done drugs also. They was legal from the doctor and over the counter. My very first sponsor, Sarge, was a member of the Cambridge Thursday Night Group, and he was GSR. So, and he was still my sponsor whenever he said, you meet me at such and such place, and we are going to an assembly. I had no clue what an assembly was. But the assembly was held in Cambridge that year from Area 53. And I went to the assembly, and I said to him afterwards, you've got to be kidding me. He said, just keep going. You'll understand a good bit of this as you progress in your sobriety. And he's right. My service work back home was mostly at the group level. And then when I came to Columbus in 1983, I started with central office answering phones. Sometime in 1986, I started to getting into more conferences and stuff. And then Area 53 started, and conference started. And in 1991, when my second son, before he died, the chairman of the Area 53 conference, asked me to be a floor manager. And I had to keep track of the coffee and all that kind of stuff. And I became that. And I was really grateful that I had something I had committed to when my second son died. Service has always kept me to the point into what I should be doing. And what I did with Area 53, I have been a GSR one time from some group, and I don't remember which group. I also became treasurer of Area 53 for a couple years. I've attended a lot of assemblies, attended a lot of meetings of where should we be and what should we be doing. The biggest thing that sticks out in my mind, because we always manage at the assemblies to come together in that, except for one time when we decided we took a vote on whether to smoke or not smoke. And that was quite a meeting that day. And the gal from Zanesville, Ohio, and I've been to a lot of Zanesville meetings also, she just really got mad, and she blamed that discussion for her going out and drinking again. And we told her she just was ready to go drink. She just needed an excuse. But Area 53 has their panels and stuff has stayed pretty doggone good. And they've had people from all over the area be in that, because there was a gentleman from Steubenville that was chairman one time, and he was in a wheelchair. And he did real well. And Stu had lost both of his legs. You know, the Area 53 has, I think, in my opinion, considering how big it is, they have done pretty doggone good of reaching out all over. And I'll be glad when this pandemic's over that we can start having workshops and stuff again, where we can see each other in person, because they've always been helpful. We've had workshops of all kinds and stuff from Area 53. And I have, in my sponsorship family, I've had a retreat for the whole weekend. We had that for, I think, 7 or 8 years. I've had workshops that we've done all over Area 53, too. A bunch of us girls that go to a place and do a workshop for the day. And our longest trip was, because most of it was from Columbus and Delaware, was going down to Athens, Ohio, and putting a workshop on. I have done workshops in Marietta for Area 53. I've done a lot of workshops. I've done them in prison for Area 53. And that was fun, doing a workshop inside of the prison walls and doing fifth steps and talking to them about sponsorship and the steps and everything. That was real interesting. But Area 53 put it on.
Was that in Marysville, Norma?
Oh, yeah. Yep, it sure was. And several of the women that was in that meeting has passed away now, like Pearl and Sylvia and a whole bunch of other ones. Been to Springfield for some, because Springfield runs that way for Area 53. We've had assemblies in Springfield and workshops over there. So, you know, at one time, Area 53 was doing real good of reaching out to every which way. So, and I know this is an Area 53 thing, but I've got to tell you a little bit about COGF, because it's been a big part of my service work too. Like I said, I stay on the phones yet to this day. In fact, my newest gal, I got through central office and she had to have a liver and kidney transplant, and that's happened. And it's been interesting to work with somebody that I've never met, you know, that's been through this kind of stuff. I've been on the board at COGF. I had night owls for God, I don't know how many years were, and Terry was one of my night owls for the longest time. She answered phones one shift a month, and that, and you know, and there's so many ways to do service work. And I've done service work in archives. I have, Calvin and I had the taping business, and that, Chris, him and I never thought of it as a service. We just loved doing it and being around different people and stuff, you know, and being different places for their anniversaries and stuff like that. But I do know that the tapes has, and CDs has helped a lot of people and stuff, and it has been good. Because we have given them to the prisons and under Area 53, and we have sold them to the prisons under Area 53. We've been in and recorded one of their conferences that they had, you know, and it's amazing, because I had so much energy and so did Calvin, that how many times we went different places and did service work of taping and stuff, giving away as much as we could afford to give away in that. The treatment centers, I see here, the treatment centers that I originally knew about, you could not go into them unless they knew you was a real AA person, you know. No family, friends, or anything like that went into the treatment centers. And I've done a lot of going to treatment centers, and most of us have been through Area 53 that I have went into the meetings and talked. The one at Parkside, I think I went up there like once a year and talked, and usually once a year, and chaired, because Tom was very active in Area 53, and he kept that meeting going, and we did real well at keeping it going. One of the things that I like about it, Area 53 and Central Office, is the fact that you rotate your people, and we really need it rotated. You know, there is a lot of history setting down the archives for COGF and Area 53, and I don't know how they got them. That's your problem, Chris, not mine. how they got them separated or together or whatever. But I do know that it is, there is so much down there. And I, in fact, right now I got CDs sitting here from Larry, the last taper, which was one of my AA sons since he was 26 days sober. I got them sitting here in the house all ready to go down to the office as soon as they pick them up. And their Area 53 conventions and workshops is either, I don't know if Calvin had time to get them all over to CDs before he died or not, but they are definitely in cassettes down there someplace. So, you know, there's a lot of history down there, that's for sure. I can remember when Area 53 conference got started, and that was a good thing.
The General Service Conference.
Yeah.
Yes, one of the nice items down there in the archives is that big purple banner.
Yes.
Yes. About 12 feet long.
Yeah. And I gave Priscilla a bunch of the pamphlet that comes telling you what's going on. Program. I had several of them here that from Area 53 conference that I have passed on. She's someday when you guys get together, she can give them to wherever you want to put them. You know, one of the things that I know is service work at Area 53 or Central Office or any position is not for everybody. And but I'll tell you one thing, it sure teaches you a lot. And it teaches you, the biggest thing I've learned out of any service work I've done is tolerance, patience, and principles before personalities, which I try to use with my family life, but I don't get too good at that all the time. I keep looking at my family as, well, they do. They all need a 12-step program. I did not get into doing delegate or anything like that. And I'll tell you why. At the time, I wasn't studying the traditions and concepts and wasn't really getting into them. And I knew to be a good anything of a chairman or a delegate or anything like that, I should know all that stuff. And I wasn't willing to do that. But standing committees and stuff, I could do, you know? And that, in fact, I just joined the accessibility committee just the first part of March.
So your heart has been working, it has been focused on that 12-step opportunity, which so many of our standing committees represent.
Exactly.
That connecting to that newcomer, and how do we make AA available to that newcomer?
Yep. So if you have any suggestions about accessibility, you can pass it on to me or Kathy, the chairman, and that, because we don't know. There are so many things that can be done to be accessible. And the last thing I'm going to talk about is this COVID. Yeah, Matt, because like I told you, I got to take a drink of coffee. Since Calvin died in 2010, I still went to meetings, and that not quite as much, because he was always 99% of the time we was always together at a meeting. And it just felt funny to be running around by myself. Still went ahead and went because that's the commitment I had made it to begin with. Whenever I got sober, I was going to go to meetings when I realized I was an alcoholic. And then in 2013, I had a bad car wreck and they couldn't and figure out why I went into blackout, because of course they couldn't find no alcohol or drugs in me, you know, and I went into some kind of blackout and they said I could have another seizure. Well, at the time I was taking my two oldest great grandsons and out in the car so much, and we would do trips, and I was so scared that I might have another seizure and kill one of them or both of them. So I quit driving, and boy, has that ever been acceptance thing, you know. And it goes back to studying the big book and doing all the things that suggested to us about acceptance and that, because I would have a real hard time living with the fact if I killed somebody. Because when I had the wreck, I hit three cars in a semi, and the car was totally sitting on its rooftop, and they had to cut the passenger side to get me and the one of my sponsees that was with me out. And I was the worst hurt in all of it. So I am so grateful for that, that whatever caused it, it didn't, you know, happen. But asking and learning to accept help from somebody else was really, really hard. And I had to learn to do that. And I had people that would do it. It was just asking. And that, so I, for the Zoom meetings and that, it has been a real blessing for me, because I am in at least five meetings a week, sometimes more, because I can Zoom. And my goodness gracious, I cannot get over how many people I've seen that I've met in my lifetime that is still doing AA. And I'm so grateful for that. And Zoom has brought us back in touch with each other. And I've chaired a couple meetings, and I'm going to be chairing again in April, the Sunbury Breakfast Group, Chris. So you better be there. And the ones that are, who have been lost during the pandemic, I'm not, as consequences of their drinking, I'm not sure about that. I haven't really had any experience with that. Our Zoom meetings for us older people, because I'm 82, has been a real blessing, because we wouldn't be going out that much anyhow. And it has been a real blessing for us. So I'm hoping and praying that when this is all over with and we can be back in meetings, that some of the groups keep the Zooms still going and doing both. And I know there is some groups that's doing both. You know, it's one of those things that God said to us again, okay, you alcoholics are creative, so get creative and do Zoom, you know? And it's been a real blessing for a lot of us. And people are getting sober, even though they haven't been in a in-person meeting. So it all goes back to willingness and sponsorship and keep on doing the next right thing.
That sounds
so, like, Chris, you got anything?
That sounds like a great place to wrap it up. Norma, before we close, is there anything else that you want to add?
I don't know. It's been quite a life, and I'm so grateful for God and AA. I really am. Yeah.
We're grateful for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Norma.
Thank you, guys. All righty. Well, glad we're done today.
I appreciate your willingness to participate. There's a little piece of the script I'm supposed to read at the end, that this concludes our oral history interview with Norma S. of Columbus, Ohio. And thank you, Norma, for your willingness to participate and your time.
You're more than welcome.